Steely Dan, live in concert.
Are you reeling in the
E? Reeling in the Chips, a nine-night exclusive Las Vegas residency. Starting April 12th through April 29th at the Venetian Las Vegas. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. There's more at SteelyDan.com.
All right, thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Gaucho Amigos. I'm Alex. Today, I share my conversation with Julian Wass. He is a musician and a prolific film composer. He also wrote and directed a musical episode of the show Room 104. That episode stars Brian Tyree Henry. And I actually watched it right before I talked to Julian and thought it was great. So I recommend checking that out. I think it's streaming on HBO Max if you have that. Now, I kind of explained on the first episode that this podcast was born out of a number of Zoom talks that I did as far back as the spring of 2021, where I was basically doing a practice run for another Steely Dan podcast that never ended up happening. And one of those conversations was this episode that I'm sharing today, this talk with Julian. That I did, I believe it was either the first or, you know, it's one of the very first that I did. This was, you know, back in, I think, either May or June of 2021. So just something to keep in mind, you know, there are references to a more recent pandemic. You'll pick up on those as you listen to it. But, you know, for the most part, you know, I think it holds up in terms of the majority of the Steely Dan content of it. And yeah. You know, I didn't know Julian personally. I had never met him, but we had had a little bit of a DM chat, and I just felt comfortable talking to him in that space. So, you know, I asked if he would be willing to do one of those practice conversations, and he agreed to do it, and we had a fun talk. And then a couple of weeks ago, I touched base with him again and said, hey, you know we did this thing 2 years ago, but if it's okay, I still want to share it as part of this other podcast that I'm doing. And yeah, he was excited. So one other quick thing I want to mention. On episode 3 with Lou Hader, we talked a little bit about Rosie Vela's Zazu, a 1986 album that was produced by Gary Katz and had significant contributions from Donald and Walter. It was actually the first album that they had worked on together since Gaucho. And to be honest, I really hadn't listened to it that much until Lou brought it up. And I've gone back and yeah, I'm absolutely loving it. There's a few tracks, Magic Smile, Interlude, and Tonto that I've just kind of had on repeat. So credit to Lou for reminding me about that album. But it also turns out that Rosie Vela herself is pretty active on Instagram. And, you know, given her history with Steely Dan, I threw her a follow from my Good Dan Takes Instagram account. And she actually followed back and commented on a couple posts. She wrote on a post of Donald and Walter that they are the greatest major dudes God ever made. So at least Rosie and Donald and Walter seem to have left things on good terms. She has nothing but good things to say about them. So anyway, that's my little pitch to listen to Zazu. And yeah, I think without further ado, this is my conversation with Julian Wass. Enjoy.
My formative Steely Dan memory was when I bought this tape of Asia, like a cassette tape, almost as like a joke, because at that point in my life, I was still sort of like, oh yeah, like Steely Dan. It's like, you know, this was sort of like the yacht rock era when like that was sort of like a funny thing to like be into yacht rock, you know, in like an ironic way. And so I like bought this Asia tape because it was like, this is when tapes were still pretty cheap. I'm sure an Asia tape would cost me more now. And I bought it and I still had a tape deck in my car and I popped it in. It was like straight up. It was a queued up to the drum solo on Asia, like the outro.
Right, because with cassettes, it's like whoever the last person to have played it is where it leaves off. It's not like CDs or
exactly, or yeah, like yeah, tapes carry this other piece of information, which is like where they left off, you know. And that I didn't know they had music like that. I just obviously knew like Deacon Blues and Peg and Josie, and you know, I don't know, Reeling in the Years, obviously, Do It Again. Yeah. Ricky, Don't Lose. I mean, you know, the hits. I knew the hits to an extent, but like, I didn't think much of it. But that was the day that like everything changed for me. Cause I was like, holy shit, this is like, what is this? This is crazy. And then like, I've like that. I mean, I don't want to say haunted is the wrong word because it's actually a great memory, but I thought a lot about like who had the tape before me and how did they come to part with it? You know, cause were they, you know, did they, were they thinking of the next person? Hey, stop squeaking that. Sorry. My dogs are really annoying.
Okay.
Like, you know, I was like, who was this person? Like, were they queuing this up for me? Or like, did they listen to it one more time before they parted with it? You know?
Yeah. And, it's kind of hard to fathom that, you know, right before you're getting to the best part of like the entire album, they're like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. And I remember I was in a band at the time. And like, I think my bandmates could kind of tell that like something had gone wrong with me because like, I remember like we had this drummer in the band who was like such a good technical drummer. Like he's really into prog rock, but specifically he's like super into like Mars Volta and stuff. And he could like play those complex things. So he's really technical. And I remember like, I just played like the drum solo in Asia for him. And I was like, what do you think about this? Like, I just want you to react to it, you know? And I remember like that same day, like I had like a home studio at the time and I had like a drum room and I had set up the mics and I really like meticulously done it. I remember when he started playing drums and it came through, I was like, wow, it sounds so hi-fi, like Steely Dan. You know, I was like almost like cried at the drum sound, but it was all part of this whole like thing that was going on with me and that Asia cassette tape at the time, you know, that I was just like, and everyone in the band was like, what's going on? And I was like, something's happening to me.
Yeah, finally around 2010, I heard Babylon Sisters at a bar and I was like, what is this? Like,
yeah.
I thought it was Zappa at first, actually, because I detected a winking tone to it, which,
yeah,
like, especially with those, the backup singers, the way they're singing, yeah, like Babylon Sisters, Shake It, it had that sort of like the whole thing was in like quotation marks.
Totally. That has a very Zappa move too. It actually reminds me of that Zappa song, now that I think about it, Hey There, about the Bobby Brown Goes Down, which is like oddly a hit. Yeah. It's like a similar kind of like palette. I mean, I used to really love Zappa, and it's like the Zappa that I like has like shrunk and shrunk and shrunk every year for the last like 15 years. But yeah, no, that's so funny. Like that you thought that makes a lot of sense actually. And so how did you go through the albums? Did you kind of like start at Gaucho? I mean, because now obviously that's the Gaucho tune. So did you go to Gaucho or did you start over and kind of go from the beginning or just jump around?
You know, I think I had actually like, I had intended to listen to Asia, like very, like it was about to happen even without that moment.
Yeah.
Like I think I had put Asia on my iTunes and I just hadn't gotten around to listening to it yet. So
totally.
I think I listened to Asia and Gaucho like literally at the same time for the first time.
Oh,
and then
that's
Yeah, I went back for Can't Buy a Thrill. And yeah, just kind of worked my way through.
Yeah. No, I mean, Asia was, yeah, totally my entry point as well, just because it's so familiar. Like you know half of it and the other half is like really awesome, you know?
Well, that's the weird thing for me. And I am still not sure how this happened, but I don't think I ever heard a song off of Asia.
Oh, that's wild.
which yeah. is, it can't be true, right? Like I must have heard Peg at some point in my life, but none of it was familiar.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was just so, it was such a great experience that it felt good.
I don't know, for the first time again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, if like you would ask me at 19, like what's Steely Dan song, I'd just be like, oh yeah, Reelin' in the Years, you know, which I secretly liked because I remember I was a huge Zeppelin fan and I'd heard that like Jimmy Page's favorite guitar solo, I forget if it was like his supposed to be his favorite guitar solo ever or just at some point he said he really liked it, but was the Reelin' in the Years solo. And I was like, ooh, I should check that out. And like, obviously I didn't tell anybody because I had friends who were not Dan positive, you know, but that was like as far as I went with it, you know?
Yeah, I feel like at that time, there were just certain bands you didn't want to tell your friends that you liked, but you know, you kind of secret. Yeah. And the Reelin' is a great example because that guitar solo is so like, if you like classic rock, you're gonna love it. But like Steely Dan wasn't on the cool list for a while, so you know, you're probably
they're on the naughty list for sure. Well, where do you live, by the way? Are you in New York or?
Yeah, I live in Brooklyn. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I grew up in nearby New Jersey, and then made the arduous trek to New York City, about 20 miles from my hometown.
Isn't that the Donald Fagen move? Isn't he like the Jersey guy that came to New York?
It is, yeah. Him and Walter from the greater New York metro area. Actually, Donald was born in Englewood, New Jersey, which is pretty close to where I grew up. It's like
that's cool.
One town over.
That's great.
Yeah, certainly could relate to a lot of his sensibility, I guess. It's just amazing. I didn't get into them earlier. I don't know why. I had just never made that leap. But like when I was really starting to get into them, it like instantly made so much sense to me. Just his whole deal.
I mean, I guess like that's sort of, this is not an original thought by any means, but it is so funny to me the way that like Steely Dan always gets lumped in, you know, like you watch like that. I mean, you probably remember the Yacht Rock show on YouTube that came out like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And it was this whole thing, like, oh yeah, like smooth music. And like, you know, it was all like Kenny Loggins and all this stuff. And it's so funny to me the way people sort of class now in retrospect that like Steely Dan would even be classified, because lyrically it's super funny and dark. It's actually like very, you know what I mean? It's like on this whole other tip, you know, it's like not really about relaxing. relax to it, but like, it's not like it's, I mean, like, I don't know. I was listening to, I did actually listen to every Steely Dan album in order again between yesterday and today in preparation for this. Yeah. I mean, I listened to
Thanks for that like dedication.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure that was a really hard decision for you to make, like, oh god, I gotta listen to the entire Steely Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I
the classic I, 70s also, run.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I did try to, I didn't get that, I did not have time to get the Nightfly in, unfortunately. Which I intended to do because it's kind of like an on, you know, it's like an honorary member.
I think that like. One is part of the classic run for sure.
I think so, and it's really good too. It's really excellent.
It's great.
But you know, like, even like, again, like getting to something like Everyone's Gone to the Movies, like it's like a fucked up song. You know, that is like very, very major key Pleasant sounding, but lyrically it's like so demented. And they do that a lot. And I think that like, you know, I guess people just don't really listen to the lyrics all that much. They just kind of hear like chorus or like wah-wah electric piano and like some jazz chords. And like, oh yeah, like hot tub time. Like let's take a Quaalude and like drink some wine and like groove, you know?
I mean, you can sneak Hey 19 onto a yacht playlist and no one's going to say like it fits perfectly. But I think to a large extent, they were kind of poking fun at that kind of music. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
They were intent. They knew what they were doing when they like set out to make the music that they did. And, you know, I think it's still like, that's not to say they were like intentionally making bad music or music that they thought was beneath them. I think that they were making incredible music, but at the same time, I think that, yeah, they occupy a slightly different space than you know, their peers that might, you know, be, you know, considered more of what we think of as like yacht rock now.
I don't know. You know, you zoom out far enough and all music is the same.
Yeah. But there's something about Steely, like just what they were doing, they're one of those bands that's, they're in their own category. Like they made their own kind of Steely Dan universe and there's nothing really like it, and that's, you know, why it's kind of standing the test of time. So did you have I know you're a musician and a composer now. Did you have like a music background, like growing up? Or I mean, obviously now I know you know, play and compose music and that's sort of, that's your career. So I mean, what, how did you, like, what led you to do to that?
I mean, I always was like really into music. We always had like random musical instruments around my house. Like my dad played guitar and we always had guitars around, and somehow I ended up with like a Casio Tone, like one of those Casio Tone keyboards that kind of like has the, I think it was like a CZ-102 or something, I forget, but you know, do beats and you could make it auto chord. And like, that was like one of my earliest memories, like playing with that. And like, I mean, I did bands and stuff in high school, and I did not think I was gonna study. I kind of like figured that I actually, once I was in bands in high school, like really shitty garage rock bands, garage rock makes it sound way too cool. Like really misguided, strange rock bands were like, I was into classic rock, the bass player was into like Cali punk, and the drummer was into like J-pop, and we somehow thought like that could be really cool, but not when you're like 14. So I kind of like left bands behind, and I had no idea that when I went to college, I would actually end up being a music major. That totally, I totally backed into that. So I did, I was like the dumbest kid at music school. Like I was like the one that had to come to like remedial sight reading classes every morning at like 8 a.m. before that, before like music 101. And I was made fun of a lot by the other students who were really like good at playing classical instruments. And I was kind of like, I don't know, they probably thought I was a burnout because I kind of looked like one, and I certainly like behaved like one. But look at me now. No, but yeah, so like I did. So like, you know, it's funny because, you know, I was really like struggling with music theory when I was like, a college student. I was like, this is so hard. I don't get it. You know, it's like not making any sense to me. And what's funny enough is like listening to Steely Dan is what actually helped me learn to love like that side of music again, because like I was be like, what is that? I want to know like what this move is. I want to know what these chords at the beginning of Deacon Blues are. I want to know like what the chords at the top of Peg are. Like, well, how does that work? Like, why does that work? Does it work? Like, I don't know. Like, I want to study it. And all of a sudden I was like, wow, like I'm now sort of the student that like I wished I had been during college. And it's funny because Steely Dan is like a big part of that, being really interested in like some of these like, you know, complex like jazz moves or whatever. So
yeah, I mean, they certainly like have a tendency to use, you know, complicated chord structures in their songs. I think one thing that's still like a kind of a mystifying element as someone who also is like, I mean, my background is actually more classical because I played the viola growing up. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And obviously jazz and rock are totally different things. But, you know, one thing that I was just recently thinking about with Steely Dan is it's not only their ability to, like, their use of chords. It's like the way that those chords evoke certain feelings that are just so specific and like how they use them for emphasis. Like it's so... like
no, it's a super cool thing about them. Absolutely.
Like Hey 19, that there's like that piano move where it's
no, and that's like his way of saying that like it's a character. This is a character. This isn't me, Donald Fagan. I'm playing the character of this like creepy old guy, you know. That's like the wink.
Yeah. Or like in, like you were saying, everyone's gone to the movie when those the female backup vocals come in. It's just like, it's like that 50s like doo-wop.
Yeah, it's like it's very like, wholesome.
it's so wholesome. And the juxtaposition.
It's like this, these are like the, this is like the level that they're playing at or we're playing at. You know?
I feel like on that album is their songwriting kind of took a leap forward. Like that song, it started to build the blocks of what became like, you know, what we think of as like, you know,
it's like the, peak the, Dan, yeah, classic.
Yeah, the sensibility, like the gaucho. Gaucho is what I think. If it hasn't been clear to you through the account already, gaucho is my favorite. But
I mean, it's my favorite too. I kind of officially announced that today, but it's been my favorite for quite some time. But no, I mean, like I feel very, you know, like you listen to like, you know, Dr. Wu, which is totally like a dry run for Asia. You know, it really is. It's like that same kind of, even like the title, it's like the it's very similar. It reminds me of the title tracks on Asia and Gaucho, and that it's like long and meandering and has different movements and some like really like weird stuff that it does. So I love that they kind of hinted at that on Katie Live.
Yeah, absolutely.
I go back and forth. I mean, I love Katie Live was actually one of the first Steely Dan albums that I owned on vinyl.
Oh, nice.
And I got really into it. I don't remember what I got next, but I remember that was like one of the first ones that I really played a lot, you know, besides Asia. I wasn't ready for Gaucho yet, obviously.
Yeah, I feel like Gaucho is more of the grower one, where like if you're in your first year of getting into them, you probably wouldn't say Gaucho is your favorite. It's usually more Asia or, you know, maybe one of the earlier ones, but yeah, with enough time, I feel like a lot of people come to Gaucho, but not everyone. I mean, I see all, again, you know, through my... through my research,
through your lofty perch, you probably see it all.
Yes,
I've really tried to use Countdown to Ecstasy on people because, you know, it really, in my opinion, I really liked discovering that album. Well, not just, you know, my first listen. I'm not going to pretend like I discovered it, but you know, my own personal journey with that album was really cool because that's like one that just didn't have any songs I knew. Like I just like whatever right. for whatever reason, I didn't have a single song that was like a big, you know, radio hit where I was. So like I had never heard those. And I, you know, it's funny, I think I had heard Show Business Kids just because at one point in my life I thought I was gonna be a really big Super Furry Animals fan. And then like that lasted for like maybe 3 weeks. And then I was kind of like, I don't know if I'm gonna do that. But they have that, you know, I don't know if you know, they have that one song that samples Show Business Kids.
Right, right. And, the Man Don't Give a Fuck or something.
Yeah, the man. Which yeah, I was that's kind of right. Like, oh, like what is that from? And so I think I heard that song, but then like, I don't know. I definitely have tried, cause they're still like really ostensibly a rock band at that point, and it's like a fun album. So I've definitely tried that on people being like, dude, just listen to this, you know, forget about Asia, forget about, you know, Can't Buy a Thrill. Just listen to this album, you know, just give it a try.
Yeah. That's a good, or even just that. Thrill, because they probably have, you know, some familiarity with, you know, obviously Reel In and Do It Again. And, you know, you can kind of work your way out from there.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's got Dirty Work, which again, like I love Dirty Work, but also it's like people, like, I don't want to speak ill of people, but like when people are like, oh yeah, like the only Steely Dan song I like is Dirty Work. I'm like, well, then you don't really like Steely Dan.
Yeah.
I mean, like that's, you know, like, like you like something else. So like, I don't want to, you know, like that's my favorite Steely Dan song. I'm like, really?
Then, yeah, I mean, you know, it's Taken Alone, it's like, it's an incredible pop song. Like if you had never heard any other Steely Dan and you just heard that song, you'd be like, wow, this is a great song. But like if that is your favorite, it's not Sung by Donald. I mean, it's not the same quite. I mean, I love it, but you know, I basically agree with you. That's what I'm saying.
Speaking of that, you know, I was talking about this with my buddy yesterday.
Yeah.
I was telling him about how I was coming on with you. Have you seen that clip? And it's the clip where they do, I forget what show it is, but they do Dirty Work and they do It Again. And in that particular version, Palmer sings Do It Again. It's super weird. Have you seen that one?
I think I've seen this. Yeah. Because Donald was like nervous performing live in the very beginning.
Yeah. And so it's like a weird version where he's kind of like, I don't know, it's just got a weird vibe. It's kind of cool. I mean, it's cool. It's like a curiosity, you know, just because he's like fronting it and it takes on a really different kind of tone with him. He's like belting it kind of, you know, giving it like a real like rock. Cause he was like a really good singer, you know?
He was, I could sing. There's no disputing that. Was he right for, was he right for the Fagan and Becker world?
No.
Probably not quite right, but.
No, but I mean, you know, obviously like if you're really like trying to put a band together, it makes sense to think, okay, well like this guy is not the singer. He like is nervous. He's, you know, he's not got, you know, what you would consider like a traditionally like quote unquote good voice. You know what I mean? He's got like he's got a unique voice.
Right.
And so it makes, you know, at that point we're like, oh, we got to get a real ace. Got to get like an ace singer, you know, some guy that can really, really like pump, you know, some guy that can belt.
So, especially during that time, I think like showmanship was really valued and.
Absolutely.
Especially for rock. I mean, they were probably trying to figure out, you know, where does Steely Dan fit into all this? Cause Donald Fagan, his, you know, him, the way he kind of sits behind the piano, it's not really a rock, you know, type of showmanship.
No, it's different.
and speaking of showmanship, so you've seen them, like when was the most recent show you went to?
Well, so, you know, I've only been to one show, unfortunately, and I had tickets for another Steely Dan show, which, you know, I believe the pandemic might have it didn't work out. All I can say is it didn't work out. I might have been out of town, but so this was like 2017 Santa Barbara Bowl, me and my good friend Mark Duplass, who's been one of my most Steely Dan positive friends. Like he really like helped me in my journey a lot, you know, because I was sort of like, those years when I was dipping my toe and coming to it, he was always like really, really supportive because he was and is a huge fan.
He was on board from the beginning.
Yeah, he's loved Steely Dan, I believe, since he was like a teenager. Like it's never been, maybe like early 20s, but he's liked them for a long time. Like him and his brother have been Dan fans for a long time. So like I thought that was really cool. I looked up to that like when I was sort of like in my nascent Dan era. So
it helps to have someone who's like, it's okay, man. Like if you want to get like incredibly hardcore into Steely Dan, we're, you know.
No, it's like, it's cool.
This is the safe zone.
so that was like a situation where I remember I had seen like online, it said like Steely Dan reeling in the chips. And I'm like, man, that is so funny. You know? And it was like, oh, it's in Vegas. And I sent it to him like as a joke. I sent it to him like as a joke. And I'm like, this is super funny. Like reeling in the chips, you know?
Yeah.
And like within like an hour, we had a trip planned to drive to Santa Barbara to see the show. Like things happened really quickly. Happened really fast. Like all of a sudden it was like, they're not coming to LA. They're coming to Santa Barbara. Let's go, 24-hour trip. So we did it. We drove up, we like got a hotel. We walked to like get tacos. We walked to the concert and it was just amazing. I mean, it really was like, you know, it in some way, I mean, there were some younger people there, but it was like a real ponytail scene for sure. Like gray ponytail, skullets, like a lot of that. You know, it was cool though. I mean, the set list, I'll send you the set list from that night, but one of the really special things was they did sing Razor Boy that night, which felt special. And like that, this was they had their female backup singers and they sang the whole song. It was just like them. And so it was really, really special.
I think I actually saw Countdown performed in its entirety. So I have seen Razor Boy.
Whoa, that's cool. When was that?
Well, they do these Beacon residencies. They were doing them either annually or semi-annually. Maybe they take years off, but
I know they did them.
So I've been to two of them where basically they do like eight shows and then like a bunch of the nights are just, they perform an album and then they do like some greatest hits after. But yeah, so every time they do a residency, I'm like trying to see a new show, but then, you know, last year there obviously wasn't one and there's not one scheduled for this year. So there's a bit of a hiatus, but I've seen two. I saw Countdown.
Are these post-Walter affairs or?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I mean, they were doing it before he died too, but the ones that I saw. Yeah. I did see them once with Walter, but not at the Beacon. I saw them in Jersey actually. So at least I saw them once with Walter. I can say that I saw that, but yeah.
I want to compare notes with you because, you know, Walter really fascinated me that night because it was clearly seemed like it was like Donald's pee break when Walter like took lead vocals on Daddy Don't Live in That New York City No More, which was really like, you know, it was like an experience. I mean, it was really like, wow. Like, did you see something along those lines? Did Walter do that on your show?
Yeah, he did. He sang the same song. I think we probably saw them on the same tour. It was maybe like 2015.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I think there was, it did feel, I think from what I've studied, there's a bit of a shtick. Was there also like a point where Walter kind of like went into a spoken word thing? Where
he does the spoken word rap or whatever.
I think sort of in the middle of K9. It's in the middle of Hey 19, where essentially the punchline is like Cuervo Gold, right? That's what I recall. Yeah. Like, which I was totally, I was blown away. I mean,
it's like a little monologue where he's like filling in the story or something.
Yeah, I mean, this was really good because, you know, since we're in Santa Barbara, like he definitely like knew the towns around there. He says, you know, after the show, maybe you'll get back in your sports car. You'll take a drive on the 101, head back to Montecito. Carpinteria, you know, like he was like calling Summerlin, maybe like he knew all like the really super, like, you know, high-end like bougie towns around there.
He knew his audience.
I mean, in some ways, like I'm so lucky to have seen them at the Santa Barbara Bowl. I mean, that was the night that that was the night that like 15 minutes into the show, like Billy Baldwin or William Baldwin, I remember him as Billy Baldwin, the cute Baldwin, he like arrived at the show and was like, wasted. He was like happy drunk. He was like joyously drunk, and he was like walking to his seat, and he was like pointing, he's like winking at people and like doing like, you know, gun fingers at people, like saying what's up. It was just like so baller. I was like, man, that guy is living his best life. You know, like fuck what any other Baldwin is doing right now. This is like, this is the Baldwin to be. This guy right now, like showing up 15 minutes late to the Steely Dan show. He clearly lives around here, like living that good life in some beach, you know, mansion. And he's just like, want to check out Dan tonight? Let's just go. You maybe had a connect. I don't know. It was just really cool. Really made me happy when I saw him come in.
I kind of had a similar, like when I went to my first Dan show, I was in like Jersey.
Yeah.
Just at this place called like the, I think it's called the PNC Arts Center. And I had no idea what to expect, but when I got there and I looked at the audience, I was just like, who are all these people here? Like it was kind of a similar like gray ponytail crowd and
sure.
Just like all boomers. I don't know. I don't know what I expected, but it was still just, like really funny to see like, who's seeing Steely Dan in like 2015? Oh,
yeah, no, the people watching this was really, really epic, I thought.
Yeah. And then the Beacon shows, the Beacon Theater is on the Upper West Side and it has a very like Upper West Side crowd.
Kind of vibe, yeah, sure.
Yeah, which is, it's similar in some ways, but it's kind of different than the one I saw in Jersey.
Right, I mean, how many people fit in the PNC Arts Center, do you know?
Well, it was, I mean, it's an amphitheater. It's pretty big.
Right. So yeah. Maybe like 5,000, or is it like a 10,000,
yeah,
5,000?
Yeah. I think it's I actually have no idea. I mean, I was kind of, that whole experience was kind of, it was kind of eye-opening because I had zero expectations for like Steely Dan being any good.
Yeah.
I mean, I had seen another, '70s legacy band.
Yeah.
I don't want to say who it is because I really like them in general, but I saw another band that, you know, often gets thrown around with Steely Dan.
Like, and yeah, and it wasn't all that, huh?
It was not worth any of the time or money spent to see it.
Yeah,
so
I get that.
I had my expectations dialed all the way down, and you know, when I went and they came on with like a 12-piece jazz band and like I think to warm up, they were just playing like a standard. And I was like, holy
yeah,
shit, like, this is legit.
Totally.
Like, I was very happy. And then they launched into Black Cow into Asia. Which, that, like,
you know, we saw like a really a similar thing, because that's what that's like exact, that's like to a T what I saw.
Yeah.
That is what
they often don't change their set lists much over the course of a tour. Yeah.
I like respect that. You know, I think that like it's, you know, I don't know. It's good to know what you're going to get into, because I was really pleased with what I saw. I was really happy.
Yeah.
I was happy that they got Asia out of the way, because I was worried that they weren't going to do Asia.
Yeah.
And I got that.
It's no guarantee. I mean,
no, I'm like, it's all good. Like, I saw that. And then, you know, I saw. They definitely, it was just, you know, it was a good night. It was a really good night. It was a really good set. It was like everything I wanted, you know, really.
That's
was.
Awesome.
I mean, nothing from, I don't, well, just Hey 19 was, no Gaucho except Hey 19, which, you know,
that's, I think I that's pretty.
That's difficult. I mean, like, that's a dark, it's a dark time. It's a dark record. You know, what can I say? It's a beautiful record, but, you know, there's a lot of misery on it. But I like albums with misery in them.
Yeah, I mean, it has a dark tone for sure. Like, it has this like bleak tone to it that, I mean, it sort of runs its course like through a lot of songs throughout. But I think in terms of just a sustained kind of like darker mood or tone, I think that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. And then when Donald went solo, starting with the Nightfly, it kind of perked things up a little bit. I mean, there's still an irony to it, but it doesn't have the sort of bleakness.
Gaucho has, but I mean, they have
done Gaucho in its entirety at a lot of the residencies.
I would really like to see that. Would be super cool.
I did Royal Scam last time, because Asian Gaucho are my main. So Asia, I don't know if I need to see that in its entirety, just because they often play like, you know, four or five of the seven at any given show, you know, but
I easily saw like at least five songs that night.
I mean, they usually play Black Cow Asia and Peg and Josie, and then Deacon. So
I guess I got the sense that, like, I mean, their drummer was like really good, but like in terms of like doing the Purdy halftime shuffle, that did not, you know, and look, there's like one guy that can really do that, you know, and it's the hit maker, Bernard Purdy. So I don't expect that to happen, but I got the feeling, like, especially like with some of this, I got a feeling that like that was not going to be like the vibe, you know, if they were not good, like Babylon Sisters, you know, Home at Last, that was like not going
to
be happening.
Right. Know? Which the, is fine. The more swinging ones are a little bit harder to pull off, like in the live setting.
Well, it's funny because they did Black Friday, and like, I'm like a big stickler for the swing beat, and I did feel like this is my one critique that I did feel like the groove of it, like, it wasn't quite right. You know, it's such a it's funny because you think like, you know, like it's like, you know, it's got that kind of like cool thing, but like it, you know, to pull that off, it's really specific. It really is a specific thing, that kind of groove. So, you know, it's
hard. Mean, I'm sure Donald and Walter would agree with that. That's why they had their hired musicians do so many takes of every single track. But
that's funny that you said, just one thought I had, that's funny because this when I was telling my friend Bo that I was coming on with you today, we were talking a little bit about like the sort of grotesque like number of takes on Gaucho, and I feel like I read that like even like Jeff Porcaro was just like, dude, like what is going on, you know, like Knopfler played for like hours and they used like 30 seconds and you know, I had this, what I compared it to was like my own personal experience during COVID, which was that like I was like extremely online in January and February. So like I was on Twitter getting like a lot of like warnings from people on Twitter being like, this is going to be bad. This is going to be really bad. You guys don't even know how bad it's going to be. And I was like, God, is it real? And I'm an anxious person. Like I have anxiety. So I was
same here.
Like, it's going to be bad. But like nobody like in my community in real life was saying it's going to be bad. It was like, it's going to be fine. The government's like, it's going to be fine. Everyone's like, it's going to be fine. But then there's these like, you know, people on Twitter being like, it's not going to be fine. So I'm like leading up to like the end of March, I'm like starting to really freak out and have this like disconnect between my own anxiety, which like as a person in treatment for anxiety, I don't want to make decisions based on my anxiety, because then the anxiety wins. So I'm cognizant of that. And I try to bring awareness to that. So I'm like, okay, I can't like not do stuff because I'm worried about this. You know, I really need to like, I need to put my anxiety away. And then like at the end of the day, I was right. Like I was rewarded. I was right all along. And I was like, well, I like being right because anyone likes being right, but I don't like that like because I was so anxious about this and so worried that I ended up being right. And so I think like a similar thing might've happened with Steely Dan, because, you know, when they did the Peg solo, obviously famously like recorded so many takes, they actually got like the best. So like they were rewarded with like one of the greatest solos ever. They did a very grotesque thing, you know, to like have that many players come in and play it that many times. It's like just, it's just abjectly grotesque to like spend that much money to go through that many souls to throw them all away. But they were right. They were right to do that.
And so, yeah, I mean,
that in some ways led to like Gaucho, because like we can just keep going because there is like there is something better like at the end of this. Like the best thing is yet to come. Like it is, you know, that's my thought. That's my little rant about COVID and Gaucho.
Interesting. And I had not made any kind of connection on that level. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I do think that, you know, was their obsessive compulsiveness or their, you know, their like, whatever you want to call it, you know, their obsessive compulsiveness or their like attention to detail, you know, to such an extreme, was that, you know, justified in the end? I don't know if I can answer that necessarily because, yeah, you know,
no,
I wasn't there and I don't, you know how the people who were involved or affected, but like, there's a reason we're still listening to Steely Dan in 2021. I mean, they made timeless music, and part of the reason that that music was came out the way that it did was was because of that. So
because they worked so hard on it and they sought it out, they went for it.
Yeah, but it's weird how specifically Steely Dan has hit during COVID. I don't know what that's about.
I don't know. I also, it's funny because I also know a lot of people that did the same with the Dead during COVID. I actually started getting heavy into the Dead like right before in like late 2019. And then I went deeper as like as into 2020. But I know a number of people who have used that as an opportunity. I mean, I think it's also boredom. I feel like some of these final taboos are going, you know, I feel like there's probably a time in my life where I'm like, oh, I'll never, if I like Steely Dan, just kill me, you know, or like if I ever get into like the Dead, you know, that'll be the end, you know, I'll really be like over the hill. And I think, I don't know, there's definitely a breaking down of those taboos, because all of a sudden I was like, dude, this music's really good, I really like this, so I don't really care what it is.
I feel like the there were like dividing lines that are starting to disappear, like, you know, these factions, like I mean, I'll, for me personally, like I for years I was kind of like, I'm not listening to the Grateful Dead, they're a jam band, and I'm not like that was just that was a line in the sand that I would never cross, you know, like
totally.
I'm not a Deadhead. I'm not a jam band guy. I don't like, you know, I don't like that kind of music. And then, you know, last year, you know, the pandemic, I'm like, all right, it's 9 a.m. What music am I going to listen to? Okay, this will kill 3 hours of the day if I put on a Dead show. And then, you know, slowly finding myself putting on another one and then another. So yeah, I mean,
so was that what you've been doing, like putting on like Dick's Picks and various shows and stuff? Has that sort of been your entree into it?
I mean, I feel like it was kind of similar to you, where it was sort of coming up before, and then that, like, just having so much time to listen to music that I didn't have, because I work in an, you know, in an office, you know, my pre-COVID I was like commuting into Manhattan and I'm like away from my house and my, you know, my music for most of the day. So it's kind of hard to throw in a Dick's Picks when you're like commuting into Manhattan. It's not exactly
like
the right
4 hours long.
The right time. Yeah.
No,
but,
it's not.
Yeah. Like, actually my fiance, a lot of her friends are really into the Dead and always were talking about them and like trying to get me into them. And I was, you know, I kind of rolled my eyes, but, I actually did always really like their songs. Like, I just was never the jam band type, so I would never like put on a Dick's Picks. But I always like really loved like all the classic you know, Dead songs, like the ones on the albums, and just, you know, the ones that are sort of like you know, the ones everyone knows, you know, Friend of the Devil.
Yeah, like the seminal pieces.
The seminal pieces, yeah. But I didn't like I never really listened to like the, you know, the 25-minute Dark Stars, or, you know, I wasn't.
Ooh, yeah, crunchy, so crunchy.
Or crispy.
Yeah, crispy and
lingo.
Super crispy. No, I mean, that's funny because like I will share that my friend Patrick, who's like a big Deadhead.
Yeah.
You know, I was sort of like, he was like, could tell I was sort of skirting around. He actually took me to see Dead and Company, and we had a really good time. I really like, oh, this is cool. But you know, eventually I think one night, like I texted him, like I was getting high. I texted him and I was like, what are some other good Scarlet Fires besides like, you know, Cornell? And within like 5 seconds, he gave me like five. Like he just shot dates. He's like 2 9, you know, he's like 2 1978.
Yeah,
like
the way
just,
they can reel off the dates is kind of remarkable. Like,
and I spent that evening like listening to them, and I was like, oh, like it, all of a sudden something clicked. I'm like, I never understood like why do you need to hear different versions of the same song? And I was like, oh, they all have such like a different spirit and personality. It is this almost like Pokemon thing. It's the same part of the brain that wants to catch all the Pokemon. Like you want to sort of catch all the really good Scarlet Fires. And now I'm kind of on like a mission for like the dankest Franklins, you know, like, and I'm going to check out that buff. That
yeah. That suite is so great. The help slip into Franklins.
Yeah,
help slip. So I feel like that a lot of Steely Dan fans can actually appreciate that. Cause it's sort of jazz fusion-y, especially the first parts of that.
No, the first two parts are super jazz fusion-y. I mean, I feel like Dan fans should be able to get down with like, you know, News of the World, you know, maybe some of the,
Eyes of the World.
Eyes of the World. Yeah. I'm actually now I'm really crossing it over.
Did you confuse I Got the News?
That's right. I've got the News of the World. I've got the Eyes of the World. No.
There actually is Steely Dan Dead jam band crossover band.
Oh boy.
Yes, that exists. It's called Steely Dead, and they do like the other one into Josie.
Oh man.
The most insane like galaxy brand idea that they actually try to.
Yeah, that is like that is big brain. That is big brain. I'm gonna have to check that. Now I'm just curious. I mean, I'm curious the same way.
It's not bad. It's not. I like it. Yeah, I mean, I've watched some YouTube clips of it.
Yeah, it like makes sense. It's kind of cool. I mean, I think it's the crossover event that we've all been waiting for, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed that there are so many Dead fans who are also Dan fans only through doing this. Like every day I see like Jerry and Steely avatars like popping up in my like there's a lot more of a crossover than I would have expected. But
I love that. Yeah. That makes me happy.
It does. Yeah.
I think that's but wonderful.
It's funny. The only other thing I wanted to say about that was I've noticed that to your point about them. It's like catching Pokemon. I've noticed that so many Deadheads, and this is true of one of my friends, are also birders. And I feel like it's that exact same part of your brain. You're trying to see all the different birds. Like,
you're giving me a new hobby.